All right, we might make a start. So my name's Adam. I've got the pleasure of chairing this session. I think it's going to be a very interesting session, very thought-provoking to talk about some of the changes, the recent changes that we've seen in the actuarial profession and the trends around the various roles that people are undertaking. So we're going to start with Caroline, followed by Case. They're both from Deloitte. They've got lots of contributions to the Institute, mainly in the general insurance side of things, but written lots of papers, so I think it'll be very interesting to hear what they've got to say about what's happening in the market. So I'll just hand over to Caroline.
Good afternoon, everyone. I apologise if I look like I'm squinting horrifically at you, but I am. It's incredibly bright up here. So I guess I will just quickly give you an overview of what we plan to cover today, and then Case will walk you through a bit more of the detail before we wrap up, I guess, with what we see as the emerging themes. And so that was... oops, we didn't practice this. Forward, maybe. There we go. That was the agenda that we were planning on running through in the session today. So in terms of, I guess, where the decision to really talk to this topic here at this forum came from was based on both our observations locally, but also the conversations we've been having with our colleagues globally, where very similar observations were being made. And so we did think it was a very topical discussion to bring to the forum this year. We will share with you some results of a survey that we have done globally around this topic, and which I think help illustrate some of the points, and we'll also talk about some of the principles, of transformation and change and how that might be facilitated. I guess at an overarching level, the sort of hypothesis that we're posing today is that as a collective, there is the profession at a crossroads with a real risk of being seen as a compliance function unless individuals' functions and more generally there is a transformation of how people behave, what's prioritised and so on. And with the hypothesis being that I guess there is that need for change for the function, the individuals and the profession to be viewed as relevant as it might have been previously. So that's the sort of hypothesis that we are working from and really trying to start to talk about some of the ways people are looking at this and the change which people are looking to make to really facilitate transformation. So just, I guess, starting with what on earth are we talking about when we talk about transformation of actuaries, I guess we're really saying there is a broad range of areas that change can be contemplated. That might be to operating models, it might be to the processes and technologies that an actuarial function is using, but fundamentally how can the function be more effective for the organisation that it's working with and really make the most for its stakeholders, and that can be in many ways. That could be in terms of fitting better in processes like financial close. It can be in terms of efficiency, in terms of headcount savings. It might be, in fact, that resources are being transferred to more value-adding activities. It could be around risk and compliance and so on, but with a fundamental premise and question around whether stakeholder needs are effectively being met and how can that actually be changed if it is viewed that that's not the case. So I'll hand over to Case to start to walk through a bit more of the details, of what and how.
Okay, so with that background, what does a transformation achieve? If we think about as chief actuaries and all actuarial functions, we feel that the requirements from our stakeholders are changing. Accuracy, technical correctness, these are good objectives to have, but they are no longer the sole objectives. Business stakeholders and they want a business partner, a trusted advisor, someone who can give advice and insights, not just the numbers, and not just mere reporting. So you know, with that in mind, in terms of benefits of a transformation, we can see the benefits including efficiency, reduction of manual processes, great automation, managing the talent that's in the team, and once we move away from the manual processes and more into automation, the talent there is not used on data, is used more around generating insights, connecting with the C-suite more and more. It helps with attracting and retaining that top talent. It's about also the governance of the function. So we talk a lot about single source of truth. We all want to achieve that single source of truth, that clean data, that clean technology that we use on the data. So how do we achieve that? How do we reduce the operational risk that's inherent in the actuarial functions? And then lastly, effectiveness. I think achieving all of that, it's all connected. But we'd be able to give the decision makers that rely on all of our advisors better support and give the insights rather than the reporting. With that in mind, I mean, I hope you can see the smallest writing there, but we feel that a successful chief actuary or head of a function, let's call it, probably has four faces. And you can see the four faces there. The bottom left-hand side is steward. We've got operator, catalyst, and strategist. What do these four faces mean? A steward or head of the function is somebody that actually protects and preserves the function. The reserving framework's very important. Pricing framework's quite important. How do you protect that framework to be doing the right thing for the organization? This is the steward function. The operator one is all about balancing all the costs and benefits and prioritizing, making sure that the function is operating to its optimal sense. So it's about service levels. It's about fulfilling the C-suite needs. It's about core competencies and so on. I mean, you can see that these really are things that we are good at, and this is a basis of any function. For a function to be well-performing, it needs to be doing these types of things. But I think in our view, I think we need to be good stewards and operators, making sure the function is running like a well-oiled machine. But more so than that, I think we also now, this is the foundation, it needs to be laid now to the other two, which is the catalyst and the strategist. Catalyst in the sense that chief actuaries actually are catalysts for change in the organization, not recipients of it. But as soon as the function is operating very smoothly, they have the time to make changes in the organization, lead that change. And also being then a strategist, the fourth phase, providing the leadership, connecting to business strategy, driving the business strategy, being a trusted advisor from the CEO, from the CFO, CRO, about matters relating to the insights we can provide. So that's a framework for faces of a chief actuary. Now, with that in mind, we thought, well, how do we understand the range of issues that actuaries around the world, functions around the world, are facing? So we do like any good company does, we do a survey. And the survey was actually Deloitte's sort of global actuarial team, connecting with all insurers, a range of industries, life, general and health, insurance and reinsurance. The addressees of the survey, so the people who actually made an input, were the chief actuaries themselves or the head of the actuarial function. So it could be head of pricing or capital modeling or whatever the actuarial collective is. We were happy with the responses. I mean, we received over 100 responses covering Australia, Canada, Denmark, Hong Kong, South Africa, Sweden, UK, USA. And it was also evenly split between small and large teams. So, small teams in the sense that they've got, say, three senior qualified actuaries, and large teams in the sense of 15 or more senior qualified actuaries. One interesting thing we also saw from this survey was the reporting lines. So where are the heads of the actuarial functions reporting into? And mostly they are reporting either into CEO, CFO, and then to a small extent into the CRO. But then there were also others, also, you know, heads of business units and the like. Now, from this survey, so what were the common themes around the world? And it was surprising in the sense that it confirmed many things that we were thinking about, but also learned a few new things. But the seven key themes that were coming across around the globe were, firstly, that the functions are at full capacity. We are all very busy, but actually it's not at full potential. One of the key drivers is bad data, bad technology, that there are operational efficiencies that haven't been gained yet, process efficiencies that haven't been gained. We have lots of processes out there where the world has evolved, the processes haven't evolved with them completely. The challenge of actually, how do you transform the function when the resources are already constrained? So every company, lots of companies are facing that. Once you do all of this, how to align with business and strategy of the company. And then what we talked about before, actuaries as catalysts for the change. Last but not least, what do we do with this for us as individuals, as a function, and then as the profession? So, yeah, we'll expand a little bit, a few more minutes on each of these. So, yeah, first one, functions. Very busy, full capacity, but somehow we're not utilizing ourselves fully. I suppose historically, if we go through a journey, historically the functions, actuaries have been quite influential in the financial services insurance fields, including setting the strategic direction. At the moment, we feel relative to the past that there's a lot more focus on operational aspects, a lot less focus on the strategic business aspects. So, you know, history to current, yes, certainly there has been a shift. The other thing that came out as well is you look at the diagram there. There's actually an imbalance in the actuarial function, and the imbalance actually is in the sense that the functions are lopsided. So if you look at the various aspects of this radial graph, we do have measuring risk and financial metrics, and you've got the ideal, the dotted line, and we've got where we feel the profession is at, the various functions are at on average. Yes, there's a lot more measurement of risk, a lot more measurement of financial metrics. Yes, and then we are carrying out our operations, that's the second one, close to ideal, not fully efficiently. But as a result of us focusing too much on the metrics, too much on the reporting side of things, we're actually missing out on the other two, the draft strategy and embed strategic behaviours. Now, is it all our fault? I suppose we can blame part of it on something, I suppose the message we gained is we asked how close are the following areas to their ideal state. So you can see the graph here, and we had team structure, technology, modelling, etc., etc. What came out of that is, yes, bad data and bad technology is a driver of the actuarial functions not achieving their full potential. Bad data in the sense of inconsistent, poorly specified data, not well-governed data repositories, you know, not having the full set of controls that actuaries use in the day-to-day. So that's on the data side. Technology is another one, in the sense that the processes used are quite manual, so we're not utilizing the full effect of technology. Now, why did we put ourselves in this state? Is it imposed on us, or did we put ourselves in it? I think it's a bit of both. And typically what happens is when organizations change, the change is not fully embedded in the data and the technology platform. Sometimes there are separate platforms. And you know, we as actuaries, we want to look at the data holistically across the whole organization, you know, even on the merged parts or restructured parts. So what do we end up doing? We end up creating our own data repositories. You know, we maintain our own. We aggregate and filter the data across the whole organization. That's a good thing. It helps us. But on the other hand, we miss out on all the controls of organizations, enterprise-wide systems, because we are taking care of our own systems. So, yes, we are relying increasingly on technology and data that's outside the organization's standard IT environment. So, yes, this introduces operational risk, and it introduces model risk, key person risk, and the like. Technology, you can see in the graph, it was actually one of the lowest rated compared to its ideal state. technology came in something at, I mean, we had a range. Is it strong? Is it good relative to its ideal state? Is it neutral, need improvement? Pretty much all of these areas, none of them rated as strong. Some of them were good. A lot we needed improvement. And the key one to me as well was modeling. Modeling is a core actuarial element in terms of what we do, day in, day out. And even that one had an average response at the lower end of good, 6 out of 10. Documentation was another one. I suppose the key message from all of this is, yes, we are faced with this issue, but actually there are tools available out there to improve all of these aspects towards the ideal state. The third theme was around the operational and process efficiency. So especially companies that are in growth-constrained environments, which we have a lot of these days, they are looking at ways to create these efficiencies. Resources are scarce, so how can we do more with less, essentially? So we asked the question, how efficient are the actuarial systems and data warehouses? Now, the results from that, and you can see the question here, we've got... is it, again, data, modeling, assumptions, results, how close are they to being effective? Interestingly, what came out of that is most responses were either need improvement or good. Again, nothing was strong. And look at the core things that we do, data, modeling, assumptions, results. All of these were needed improvement. These are according to the chief actuaries. Now, some elements such as analytics and documentation that needed many more improvements. So what do we mean by operational efficiency and process? I mean, you can see there operational efficiency is it's about getting the right structure within the team. How do you have the target operating model that works for you? It's about decisions of onshoring versus offshoring, which has cost implications. It's about insourcing versus outsourcing. Process efficiency, on the other hand, is more about the systems and the processes that are used, but also about data. So all in all, on this theme, I think the key message coming out we felt was the maturity of the actuarial function, how mature is it in terms of its efficiency, operational and process-wise. That's key. That has to be understood first before actually starting to improve it. The fourth theme was something we touched on already, so overcoming constrained resources. And the challenge here is how to do all of that, transform yourself, when the function is full at capacity already. And what we thought, and what you can see here, is actually a very colourful-looking graph, but it's summarised in the table next to it. All the elements that we work on as heads of departments, as participants in that department, data quality, model development assumptions, and so on and so forth, what is the largest barrier to actually improving those aspects, given that we saw that they are less than their ideal state? And what was interesting is resource constraints, these are the largest barriers, but you can see from the graph that there are also other barriers. Resource constraints was actually the largest barrier in quite a few of these elements of the actuarial function. Technology, time, also featured in the others. So the key message that came out of this theme, how do we do this? What we have tended to find is actually you can derive value by not necessarily solving every single barrier, but merely by focusing on the key barriers, not all of them. There's a lot of value that will be gained from that for the function. The second message was all these aspects that we see here, these elements with their own barriers, they're all connected. So it's key to actually understand how if you want to improve one aspect, what that means for the other aspects. It's like a jigsaw puzzle that continues to move. You can't just do one piece. You need to understand it's important to understand the repercussions while these improvements are happening. The fifth theme was how to align with the business and strategy. Now, it's interesting in terms of background. I mean, most actuaries are or actuarial functions. They're either reporting to CEO, CFO, or CRO. they're all really connected to business and strategy. So why aren't we connected to business and strategy? I mean, clearly it's within our scope, it's within our reach. So when we asked about how well aligned actuarial function was to business strategy, the average score was good. If you look at the graph and you look, I mean, it's quite small perhaps, but you can see that nothing there, I'll explain the graph. These are the actual different functions that the actuaries interact with. So management being one of them, but also we've got claims, underwriting, finance, and so on. So what we found there was the interaction levels are not strong across the board. On average, chief actuaries feel that they are very connected to finance, but less so to underwriting and claims management, and also less so to management. So there's definitely areas to improve. So the message out of that was, if actuaries can add insight, and we feel we can, to the various functions, to the claims area, underwriting, to management, why aren't we doing it? And certainly there are tools available out there, again, which can enhance these connectivities, so we should be using them. If we compare ourselves to other professions, if we say the accounting profession or the risk profession, over the last 10-15 years, the finance profession has utilized a lot of these tools and frameworks, and they've conducted many finance transformations. I feel that they have been the beneficiaries of that. They have evolved themselves, kept themselves relevant. Risk professionals, likewise. So why aren't we doing the same? The penultimate one, actuaries as catalysts of change. Yes, good operators, good stewards of the function, but less known to be catalysts, less known to be sounding boards for strategic business direction. The survey results, when we asked the chief actuaries about their opinion of the key drivers of change that over the last 3 to 5 years, they said that the most significant driver for their activities, their strategies, was regulation. Regulation drove the agenda for the chief actuaries. Less than 10% of the responses talked about product development, business development, expansions, growth areas for the business. That's a very surprising result, because if we compare that, what the chief actuaries are saying, compared to Deloitte has also conducted a CFO survey around the world. CFOs are talking about growing, how to grow their business, given the current economic conditions in the last 3-5 years and now, how to get strategic input to these growth ideas. So, you know, if we are so connected to the CFOs, why aren't we talking about the same messages? So two messages that came out of that is, we feel that if we don't drive the change through, then perhaps by default we will be the recipients of it over a period of time in the medium to long term. And yeah, the message that I iterated before in terms of the accounting and the risk professions and what benefit they have had from these types of transformations. And last but not least, I'll pass on to Caroline to talk about how to create the perceptions for the future.
So we just wanted to, I guess, conclude the results of the survey with coming back to the four faces model that Case talked about earlier, and really, I guess, it's a view from us, and we'll look forward to the conversation in the room once we wrap up this presentation very shortly. But really, in our view, I think that, clearly there's been probably a strong focus around getting a lot of stuff done, getting it done accurately, meeting regulatory requirements. There's been a lot of regulatory change that has consumed a lot of the focus of actuarial functions for some time. And so there has been a lot of focus around the steward and operator roles. Our perspective would be that there does need to be some rebalancing, and that some of that is is about perceptions, and that people need to perceive the actuarial role as being relevant in the catalyst and strategist space, but that for us to be relevant and to not become marginalised or perceived as solely a compliance function, which I'm sure most people don't want to be solely perceived in that space, that there does need to be some work done around freeing up time and bandwidth, brain space, to really be able to demonstrate the value in the catalyst and strategist space. So I guess in conclusion and wrapping up the presentation for today, I guess some of the overarching points we thought we'd just conclude with. Our view would be that the expectations of the stakeholders of the actuarial function do continue to change over time, and clearly that is not just around accuracy and precision, not that it probably was ever just that, but it certainly is well beyond that, and that right now not all stakeholders are necessarily seeing insight and understanding from their actuarial functions. Secondly, that because of the sheer volume of work and the capacity constraints, there has been a lot of focus on the operational aspects and the steward aspects, and that certainly has probably not left the bandwidth to really adequately address some of the other issues. Our view is that there will be fundamental change required to better address stakeholder needs on a agile basis going forward. This is not a once-off, but really how can functions be more agile and flexible to keep up with stakeholder demands going forward, but that fundamentally the same sorts of issues and changes have been addressed in other functions, and that there are frameworks and tools that are readily available to help people work through those changes. And we'll leave the formal presentation at that.
So if anyone has any questions, please make your way to the microphones in the middle and state your name.
Peter Larson. Thanks, guys. Quick question. I know you've got a point of view coming out, but I'll ask a question anyway. Can actuarial transformation happen in isolation, or is it part of a larger transformation project?
Yeah, Peter, I know what you look like, but I couldn't see you fully with the lights. That's a good question. We are embedded in many aspects of the organisation. We've got tentacles of reach into various functions. So if the actuarial function is transformed, that will have impacts on all the interfaces to the other department. So we view that an actuarial transformation can actually, it's more appropriate and more effective for it to be part of a larger program of works. Having said that, it really depends on also what you are transforming. So if it's merely about the modeling aspects or the process aspects that are contained within the actuarial function, then yes, there can be some elements of transformation that can happen within the department. But if it involves other aspects, including target operating models, the structure, including cultural aspects, changing the way actuaries think and their attitude, their approach to things, that may well be part of a larger organization-wide transformation.
Jenny Lyon. I was just wondering whether you could give us your views on the See What We See campaign that the Institute's been doing, in terms of whether you feel that's going to contribute to changing the perception of actuaries with the key stakeholders. Thank you.
Jenny, I'm aware that you are on the leadership committee of the Institute, and I'm aware also that the Institute's 2013-15, I think if I've got the years right, strategies to actually look at this whole thing around the profession and how to interact it. There is a lot of benefit in actually going outside the profession and looking at what techniques and tools have been used in the other professions and how they have done those at the organisational level, but which then, I mean, it is a sum of the parts. But You know, you've got the organization level bottom up, but then you've got institutes top down. I think there's a lot of benefit in actually drawing on those tools and frameworks.
Just to comment on the specific question, I think, you know, the campaign clearly does help address some of those perception issues, and it does clearly address value added by actuaries, which is clearly one of the topics we were talking about, that perhaps people aren't necessarily seeing that day to day, but that I think, as Case says, the two do need to come together. A marketing or PR campaign can only take you so far. People need to see it in reality as well, day to day.
Linda Carradus, thanks for that really interesting presentation. I just wanted to ask something about those tools that you were mentioning. I think specifically during the presentation it related to tools to help with the connectivity between the chief actuary and the other departments. Can you tell us something about these tools, or are you talking about some proprietary and very excellent Deloitte consultancy services?
Well, of course, we're talking about our very excellent consultancy services, but I think fundamentally the comments were really around people being very clear in their operating model and their structures, how those intersections are happening, not happening, where they should be happening, and really getting clarity on where the gaps are emerging. So it's not rocket science, but people actually need to go through that process of really making sure that all those connection points are being adequately addressed and stakeholder needs are actually being addressed day to day.
And also, I mean, it's about... that's why I mean things outside the actuarial profession, because there are change management concepts that help to do all these things. So if you bring people who do this, plus people who know what the actuarial, how actuaries think, and we feel that that's a good combination. So the tools concept is similar to what Caroline alluded to, but also in terms of bringing the right perspectives into the organisation, both perspectives, the outside actuarial and in actuarial, to then help make that change.
David Morris. It was interesting seeing the views that the chief actuaries had of their influence, but it would be equally interesting to know what the CEO's views of the usefulness of actuaries. And one thing that struck me was the comparatively low percentage of actuaries that were actually reporting to the CEO. Now, that may be a function of whether it's general insurance or, you know, what particular business they're in. But unless you can change the CEO's perspective of the usefulness of actuaries, then it's going to be a bit difficult, I think.
So I think you're exactly right. I mean, I think there was not to, disagree with any of the chief actuary's views of where things are at, but there was an element probably of self-reporting there. And I think, you know, what we observe in reality, and this is, again, not just Australia, but certainly globally, the reality of where chief actuarial roles are sitting today where relative to where they may have been previously and what is, you know, quite clear in terms of some of the commentary around how those CEOs, CFOs view the input of their actuarial functions. I think the reality is that there are issues of how perception of contribution is right now, and hence why we actually went down the path of actually preparing this, because that's what we observe and that's what we hear right around the world. There are differences, life GI, there are differences, business structures, whatever, but at the macro level, the role has evolved to one that reports not necessarily where it used to, is not necessarily viewed as having the contribution it might have, and people are saying we've got this very expensive function that doesn't necessarily add a lot of value, which is not a great place to be.
Let me actually compliment that. I'll explain to you two simple steps that are actually really complex to do. So the CEO doesn't feel that there's much value that they derive from the chief actuary. All it needs is actually the chief actuary to have a very well operating function, quite efficient processes, freeing them up to utilize their intellect, their understanding of insurance and its dynamics and all the good things that we know, to then free themselves up to actually connect to the CEO at a completely different level, rather than being completely bogged down with fixing things, manual aspects and reporting of numbers. So fix the operate and shoot aspects and then move into the other two, the next sphere. It sounds very simple, but yes, there are complexities because it's also about getting the team built up to think like that, building all the systems around. So there are many elements to it. But I feel that the CEO's perception can actually be changed through us evolving ourselves, and over time, that perception will change.
Hi, Jenny Dean, Aon Hewitt. I'm sure a few of you might have heard when you hear, oh, you're an unusual actuary. I'm sure we don't want to, we all want to be that type of unusual actuary. You mentioned freeing up time and systems. How much of this do you think is actually a mindset change as an actuarial profession? And also with the other actuaries that are in the team, what element of training and exposure do they need to be the next chief actuaries that have that strategic view?
Yeah, thanks, Jenny. Good question. Technical correctness and very strong accuracy has a cost to it. So if our business stakeholders are actually okay with getting an answer that's not 100%, but that's 90%, and that's still within our comfort level to sign off or what have you, why don't we go for that? So yes, part of it is mindset, but also part of it is an inherent thing. I mean, we talk about hardwiring things and softwiring things. Hardwiring in terms of getting the infrastructure right of all the stuff that we've got that we utilize, so all the IT platforms and the data. But then the softwiring part, you may have that perfect, but if you don't have the people, so the softwiring part embedded rightly, culturally, the right mindset, that won't work. So you need both. That's our view.
Don't be shy.
I won't be. Hugo from RGA. Is the actuaries, the Institute of Actuaries, intend to change their education program to basically promote the value of actuaries within companies and organizations and the values that they can bring on different aspects of them? For example, if I take example of the Society of Actuaries in the United States, they recognized some times ago that actuaries were probably now seen more as being technical experts than anything else. And based on that, they decided to promote communications and integrate more evaluations to get the credentials on the communication side so that actuaries could basically show what they can do, whatever is their current role.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm not an institute spokesperson. But look, it's a good question that touches on the profession-wide aspects. You think if you have to change the mindset of the actuarial profession, I mean, you also have to, it's what us as a profession now, but also if this is to be a long-term view, either we change ourselves and the future actuaries are looking at us as examples and learning that way, or similar to what, say, with the UK Institute, and look, this is a personal view, not the Institute's view, but similar to what the UK Institute did with introducing the communications module to its syllabus. That was all about getting actuaries to think about that a lot more. So, you know, what parallels are there to what we are talking about here today, and what are the implications? I mean, certainly I can see Elaine coming to the front, but anyway, that's just a personal view.
Okay, thank you.
Elaine Grace, Deputy CEO at the Actuaries Institute. Yeah, look, I'd like to confirm just that as part of the whole education review, we're certainly looking at what are the broad skill sets that actuaries need in the future. And that would certainly include communications, but it would also include, I guess, you know, just business knowledge. And I guess that's one of my interests, certainly from speaking to some of our younger members. How do we get our members to be more interested in the broader world and have a day where they always start reading the AFR, the newspapers, so they get that context of where we work in the broader world? I think we certainly need to encourage that more. And maybe it is more of our senior actuaries actually speaking to our junior actuaries and encouraging that to, you know, free up some time for that bigger thought leadership around where both we act as professionals in the broader business world, but also where our businesses lie in the broader, you know, the broader Australian economy, and to have some views around that. I guess I'd like to get some opinions on how you think we can encourage our younger actuaries to take that journey.
Related point, and I'll come back to your specific question, but one of the interesting observations as we were working on this globally is that most chief actuaries, when they come into their roles, have worked their way through an actuarial department, and whereas historically they might have had some exposure out into other parts of the business, more recently it has typically been working their way through the actuarial department, and then they find themselves in a position of needing to influence stakeholders and do lots of things which they haven't had a great deal of exposure to, whereas in other parts of the organisation, people do get a lot more of that through the things that they've been working on, less so than actuaries. And that was certainly an interesting reflection from some of the work some of our colleagues had been doing with people transitioning into chief actuary roles and the challenges they were having, particularly around stakeholder management, which is obviously such a key driver of perceptions. In terms of your specific question around, I guess, how to get people interested in the broader world and the broader things that are going on and the relevance of the actuaries, I guess I don't have a specific answer other than that real question of what is one trying to actually do, and there has to be greater, I guess, output for you as an individual if you are more connected with what's actually going on than working at the edges. So I guess to me it's self-evident, but obviously it's not self-evident to everyone.
Joanne Morgan. Another way of looking at that, perhaps, rather than education...
Sorry, we can't hear you. Yeah.
How's that?
That's perfect.
Joanne Morgan. Another way of looking at that, perhaps, is, rather than from an education point of view, is what are the opportunities we have working in the roles we are, and I'm not a chief actuary, but what opportunities do we have to interact on a different level? So one that comes to mind for me might be around interpretation, predictive nature of the data that we see, data analytics. So I'm wondering about views from our panel. Sorry. In terms of what other opportunities might we have to interact and change the view of the C-suite about how they view actuaries.
I mean, every interaction we have with a C-suite member, and we are on the reserving side, we're strongly connected to the CFO side of things, plus reporting to the board on pricing to the business. But I feel every interaction actually does present that opportunity, in the sense that, yes, we can deliver on what we usually deliver on, reporting, you know, what has happened to the claims experience and what we have done with the reserves or the pricing, but then, you know, taking that to another perspective altogether in terms of what the implications of the business, what the CFO, CRO, CEO would be thinking about. So that's a general answer. I think more specifically, and touching on some of the things that Elaine was talking about, being actually aware of the environment around us. A lot of the time we are so focused on our own work, on what happened to the claim frequency year on year, or the average claim size, etc., that we miss out on actually having that bigger picture, the real world picture. So, yes, how do we, you know, if we are able to free up our time through more efficient processes, then we've got to switch on to use the extra time for the right things. So, yeah, that's another opportunity in terms of connecting with the C-suite to be able to do more and more of that. Over time, I mean, I have attended a number of business strategy meetings with C-suite. They really do look to the chief actuary a lot when it comes to the areas that we are experts in. So, I mean, that is a positive insight into what they think of us. But then the question is, beyond that, can we actually tell them something about their areas which sparks an idea for them? So it's about achieving more and more of that. And I think the only way to achieve that is for us to move away from what we usually do and try to broaden ourselves perspective-wise. Yep.
Richard Lyon. I find myself sitting here thinking we've got this back to front. We all know plenty of extremely dull, boring accountants. And nobody says that there's something wrong with accountancy training that produces CFOs like the CFOs we've got. The thing is that the CFOs get picked out of all the other accountants as being the ones of those best placed to do that job. It's competition to get a decent CFO. The life companies, the general insurers, are competing with other employers of actuaries to get a chief actuary. And they say to this chief actuary, potential chief actuary, we've got this wonderful job for you. It's very important that you get everything right. You're our liaison with APRA. If anything goes wrong, your head's probably on the block. And we're going to ask you to report to the CFO and come along to board meetings when we invite you. That's where the problem is. That's why there are appointed actuary roles that are vacant at the moment. It's that the people who need to employ them are not competing properly for the actuaries that are definitely out there. You look around, you know lots of actuaries who'd be very, very good appointed actuaries. We don't need every single actuary coming into the profession to be someone who could walk into a chief actuary role, because then we'd have a different problem and it would be a lot worse.
I don't disagree that obviously not everyone is good at everything, and just like the accountants, there'll be some dull actuaries and some dull accountants. But I think you do highlight one of the key points, that the fact that where and how those roles are structured does impact who is interested in them and how they choose to deploy their time. And conversely, where those roles are currently situated and how they are structured is reflective of how the organisation has perceived the value or the contribution from those roles in the past. And so you've got two things that are working against each other, and certainly not for the best outcome.
Do we have any other final questions?
Esther, coming sure. Hope you can hear me. I thought we'd run out of time. But interesting, I guess, observation about how we can... Okay, there goes the bell. But I'll just put this out there. You don't have to answer it. But what I was thinking is that as long as we think of actuarial transformation within the actuarial function, and we think about the traditional roles, because if you talk to an actuary now, most of them will say, oh, I'm in pricing, I'm reserving. And I think therein lies the problem, that we already define what it is in our heads, actuarial function. And so trying to grow within that already defined box is actually quite difficult. So I think, like, the See What I See thing with the institute is quite good. But I just wondered, or wanted, I wanted to see what you'd have, I guess, come up with outside the box that has already been created. Because I suppose to grow, you have to think outside the box.
I mean, a few years back, we thought we'll expand the range of actuarial, and you know, we talked about new green fields opportunities, and you know, that has worked. And if you think about investment and health compared to 30, 40 years ago, and new areas as well that maybe emerge. I mean, there's talk about disability now as well being a new front for actuarial science. Is it about that, or is it also about our existing bread and butter practices? How we expand our spheres of influence there, and I mean, I'm of the latter school in terms of, yes, it's great to also expand into the greenfield areas. That's good for the profession, but how to embed ourselves better in the existing areas that we have, and you know, touching on what you mentioned, Richard, on the competition amongst the CFOs. Part of it is law of large numbers. I mean, there are a lot more accountants than actuaries, but also we are very, very capable individually and collectively. So, it is just a few those small, simple steps at the organisational level, which I feel will translate to something for the profession.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for your contributions, and please join me in thanking Case and Caroline.